Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the 4th of April, 2024, right? 4th, yeah. Friday the 4th. It's a Thursday. That's all I know. That's all that really matters. It's almost Friday. I'm Derek Hunter. Thanks for listening, downloading, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com is where you go to help the show, where you go to become a hero. Save a child. Help a child. Make my child's life better. Anyway, appreciate the support. Thank you for listening. Let us get started. There's a lot going on, a bunch of things to talk about, and we're going to cover as much ground as humanly possible. I want to get into, right from the start, the anatomy of a smear. How Democrats... One of the things you have to ask yourself, or you should ask yourself, or you should ask your... Actually, better to ask your liberal friends... Pretty basic question. If Donald Trump is so awful, why do you have to lie about him? Right? That's a basic question. If Donald Trump is so awful, why do you have to lie about him? Wouldn't the truth be enough? But it is not. Yesterday in Michigan, Donald Trump went on to talk about Lake and Riley. Went on to talk about other people, other Americans that have been murdered by illegal aliens let in by this administration. And it's it's telling. It's interesting. Democrats aren't at all interested in the Americans murdered by illegal aliens that they let in the country. They couldn't give a damn. They don't care. They don't talk about them. Joe Biden still hasn't properly pronounced Lincoln Riley's name. He once said Lincoln Riley. Or twice, said Lincoln Riley during the State of the Union address, while holding a pin that was given to him by Marjorie Taylor Greene that read Lincoln Riley unambiguously. The guy couldn't even look at it and read it. He didn't care enough to. He knew what he had been instructed to say on the subject, and he started to say it, regardless of whether or not he got her name right. That was it. That's the only time he ever attempted. Now, the wildly historic Corinne Jean-Pierre has mentioned her once. And while bobbing like a chicken, pecking feet off the ground. And yep, we totally, our sympathies go out to the family of Lake and Riley. It's terrible, tragic, blah, blah, blah. Standard boilerplate. She was reading it from her thought book, her dream journal, whatever the hell you want to call the binder that she does. Yesterday in Michigan, Donald Trump brought it up again, and the Democrats took a seven-second clip. The Biden-Harris campaign, their official account, took a seven-second clip and put it out on social media with the following caption, Trump, : Democrats said, please don't call immigrants animals. I said, no, they're not human. They're animals. Well, that's a hell of a thing, right? Immigrants are animals. Is that what Donald Trump said? Is that what the seven-second clip that Democrats put out says? Has Donald Trump said? Well, let's listen to the seven-second version of it, shall we?
The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals.
Now, the Democrats, the Biden-Harris campaign put out the following, Trump, : Democrats said, please don't call immigrants animals. I said, no, they're not humans. They're animals. Now, that's not what was heard in that clip. Donald Trump didn't say Democrats said, please don't call immigrants animals. He said them. Just to be sure, let's play that clip again. Just make sure. Democrats said, please don't call immigrants animals is what Democrats have Donald Trump saying. Here's what Donald Trump actually said.
The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals.
No, it's them. That's a different thing. Now, if you say them, it could still mean that Donald Trump is talking about the sweet, sweet, nourishing illegal aliens who are, of course, our moral superiors. They are our betters in every way, shape, or form. I've seen MSNBC, I know that they are better than us. Where they go, crime plummets, education levels skyrocket, incomes go through the roof, and all is right. I think rainbows actually follow them around. I'm not really sure about that last one, but it can't be that far off from the truth. And oh, by the way, the Biden-Harris campaign also tweeted that out in Spanish, those exact words. Trump, los demócratas, I don't know how to speak Spanish, but whatever, it was all in Spanish. It was immediately right after. Weirdly, on Sunday, when they were wishing everybody a happy Trans Day of Visibility and declaring Easter to be Trans Day of Visibility, there was no such Spanish language tweet. They tweet everything in English and then in Spanish because they pander. It's supposed to be a requirement to become an American citizen is that you're able to speak the language, but why let facts get in the way of a good story? Democrats want Hispanics to believe that Donald Trump hates them, views them all as animals, whereas they don't want the Hispanic community, the Spanish-speaking people in this country to know, because they're heavily Catholic, that devout Catholic, damn near Pope Joe Biden, declared Sunday to be the Trans Day of Visibility and fully supports the genital mutilation of children. They didn't put that out in Spanish. It's weird. But anyway, I thought 7 seconds of a clip, that doesn't seem like a whole lot. I have seen Donald Trump rallies on television. I know them to be longer than 7 seconds. I really do. Some of them are up to 10, 15, 20 seconds. Oh, just kidding, of course. 7 seconds is cut deliberately and then lied about in the text, saying Democrats said don't call immigrants animals instead of them, because the truth doesn't help Democrats. So you hear that in a normal, curious person, a cynical person about politics, and you should be cynical about politics, would go, huh, I wonder what them means that Donald Trump is saying. Who are the them? Well, if you get the whole clip, it's only about 22 seconds, pretty easy to grab, you discover who them is. He's talking about the murderer of Lakin Riley and the murderer of a Michigan woman who was 25 years old by another illegal alien. Let's give you the whole context. Let's see if this gives it a different spin from what you just heard.
A student in Georgia who was barbarically murdered by an illegal alien animal. The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals. And Nancy Pelosi told me that. She said, please don't use the word animal, sir, when you're talking about these people. I said, I'll use the word animal because that's what they are.
Yeah. People who murder Americans, illegal aliens who murder Americans. The last time this became an issue with Donald Trump, Democrats tried to stink him. He's calling immigrants animals. He was, again, in that situation, unambiguously discussing what? MS-13 gang members. Violent, murderous MS-13 gang members. Don't call them animals. They're wonderful people. Yeah, okay, Nancy, let's put some of them in your neighborhood. Well, see if we know your security wasn't all that great a little while ago, but maybe it's been beefed up a little bit. Can we test that theory? Are you willing to put up with somebody? How about somebody covered in tattoos? I mean, talking face, neck tattoos, head shave tattoos. Will you put them up in your basement? You've got a nice big-ass house sitting there, Nancy. You're an empty nester. All the kids are out milking the family name, making a fortune. You might as well let some nice illegal alien. What could possibly go wrong? Of course, this is the Democrats lying. They're lying about Donald Trump because the truth does them no good. They're lying about Donald Trump because the truth does them no good. That's the only reason to lie. Now, they're being called out on social media about this, but it doesn't matter. If you don't check on the replies to this tweet, you'd never know the truth. Democrats are not benefited by the truth. That should tell you an awful lot about what's going on. They're simple. You just put it out. You can argue that no human being, like they do with, if you use the term illegal alien, which is, by the way, in statute in the law, and you say, oh, no, no, don't use the term illegal alien. No human being is illegal. Well, yeah, they are. The ones here illegally are illegal. Ones anywhere illegally are illegal. Right? It's a legal alien, but no, nobody. Nobody is illegal. And they almost start tearing up, welling up, going, oh my goodness. Can you believe the thought of this? They don't really actually care about that. They want to control the language. They want to confuse people. Illegal alien lets you know unambiguously what that person is, that they don't belong here. They came here against the law. They violated our sovereignty. Now they're undocumented migrants. They used to be undocumented aliens, but then, oh, aliens, maybe people think they're from space. It was really all just baby steps. They call them new arrivals, new Americans, whatever they want to call. It doesn't matter. They're butchering the language. Not because they really think that anybody's going to fall for this. It's because they want the control. They want the control. If you're willing to follow them and speak only the language that they approve of, what can't they get you to do? Honestly, what wouldn't they be able to get you to do? Is there anything you couldn't get them to? They couldn't get you to do? That's why it's so annoying, personally, when I watch Fox News and they talk about the migrant this and the migrant that and the migrant crisis and the migrant. No, they're illegal aliens. If so-called conservative media can't even get it right, then we've really seriously lost. But back to the Democrats. They put this out. They put it out in Spanish. They put it out deliberately to mislead people. This is a case study in media bias, even though this isn't media doing it. This is how the media works. They put out a headline. Then they put out then the story. Most people will see the headline. And how many times have you seen a headline where you're like, well, what's that? And you click on it, like, and then you find in the story that it doesn't actually stand up, the declaration in the headline. Sometimes they sneak in little quotation marks in there to say, to on various words, and then they phrase it like, oh, well, this is pretty bad. And then you realize, no, that's not what the story is about. They recognize that most people won't read the story. It's the same theory as collection or the corrections. You've got a screaming headline in the story that declares Donald Trump's a Russian tool, and oh my goodness, Donald Trump Jr. got access to the Wikipedia email long before anybody else. It's obvious collusion. And then the correction comes 2 days later, and sorry about that, we were wrong. Turns out it was just a public email link. Mistakes happen. We're going to look into how this happened and do our best to make sure it doesn't happen again. Well, that's on page A24. In font, you need a jeweler's loop to read. It doesn't really even matter if they screeched it across the headline as of the paper, the top of the paper, because the original lie has already entered the consciousness. What's amazing is you don't realize it. If the story breaks, the first couple of hours are when stories really go crazy as far as traffic goes. You can watch it. It's boom right at the if it's going to have any legs at all. Most stories don't have any legs. But as somebody who's had jobs or you're paid on the traffic of the that your stories generate, boom, it hits. It is a high. Now, you try and maintain as high as you can for as long as you can. If it's an interesting story and other places are linking to it, you can do that for a little while. But then it goes down. But every person who saw it is a person who will never unsee it. Now, what does that mean? That whatever is in the story forms the opinion on the subject of the person reading it forever, in perpetuity. Doesn't matter what comes out later. If the correction comes out, oh man, we retract this story. Forget a correction. We retract this story. The whole thing is gone. We should have never run it. We were way wrong. Sorry about that. Well, the thousands and thousands and thousands or millions of people who saw a story already probably will never know about that. Even those who do know about it will quickly forget about it. because it just won't be an issue. And then a couple years later, the general subject will come up and they will remember, their brain will go back to the original screaming headline. Why? Because the original screaming headline was, oh my God, what's that story? And then you read the story, oh my God. Doesn't matter that a couple days later it was retracted. They admitted they made it up or whatever. I'm sure there are still people out there who believe what Stephen Glass and Jason Blair wrote. I'm sure there are. Because they've never been exposed to the opposite. And even if they have, it didn't make as big an impression as the original lie. That's why Democrats are comfortable doing this. They also have the comfort, I guess. The comfort of knowing that if PolitiFact or any of the other so-called fact checkers get around to looking at this and going, Democrats don't call immigrants animals. If anybody fact checks this, of course, it won't stand up to scrutiny. It just can't stand up to scrutiny. But you're not dealing with honest people. So you say, well, I'm PolitiFact. It's only half true. Or it's half false or whatever, because Donald Trump was referring to immigrants. He was just referring to immigrants who had committed crimes. Democrats have asked him not to call any immigrant animals. So in that sense, it's half true. But in this particular case, he was referring to not all immigrants. He was referring to one in particular who killed an American. Not that that matters or anybody cares about that. But, you know, they find a way to do it because that's how these people work. It really is the most twisted profession in the world. Honestly, I get that the White House people and everything have no conscience, no soul, whatever. But when you look at the so-called fact checkers, you do have to sit there and go, how do you live with yourself? Because I don't think a normal person could do that. I don't think a normal person could look at the things that they're putting forth and go, that's not remotely true. But we're going to only declare it half true or half false or whatever. Why? Because, well, they have an agenda. An agenda uber alles. And that's said in German because they're Nazis. By the way, I just saw this on Twitter, and you want to see something, talk about education system being overwhelmed. We need more teachers. We need more. Yeah, that's what happens when you import the third world. The Fairfax County Parents Association put this together. Said, lone Fairfax County school board members asked Fairfax County government to, quote, spend in smart ways that solve salary problems, not in ways that perpetuate the problems. Well, then they put together a salary comparison. The president of the United States is paid $400,000 per year. The superintendent of Fairfax County Public Schools, a woman named Michelle Reed, makes $399,836 a year. Well, money of the... Okay, John Roberts, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, $277,700. Marty Smith, the Fairfax County Public Schools Chief of Staff, which is a glorified assistant for the superintendent, I imagine, is $273,561. Secretary of Defense makes $221,400. Vice President makes $157,000. 26 Fairfax County Public School senior staff positions earn over $200,000. We need more money on education. We need to do this. We need to do that. Hell, everybody wants more money in education because everybody in education gets more money. You sit there and you go, how the hell can we be spending $40,000 per student and getting a bad result? Well, pretty simple. Not much of it makes it to the classroom. How many layers of bureaucracy do you possibly need? Could you possibly need? That's how government works. That's why when I say they talk about welfare during welfare reform, one out of every $5 in welfare spent on welfare made it to the recipient. The rest was gobbled up by the bureaucracy. Salaries and benefits were people who had to administer this. Well, you kind of need some of those people because the fraud would be even more rampant than it already is. But there comes a point when their existence becomes a bigger problem than the fraud. It becomes its own kind of fraud, doesn't it? Yeah, it's for the children. Is that why you're making $400,000 plus bennies plus a pension? For the children? I got kids. Where's mine? Where's yours? We're screwed. We're the ones paying it. The joke's on us. Really, it's kind of funny looking at the school board making as much as the president. They're all overpaid. But this is how government works. It's not their money. What the hell do they care? We need more money for the children. Why? Well, you spend 40% of your budget on administrative. We have to administer the thing. We need to do this. We need to do that. We need to do the other thing. What about accountability? No, not accountability. How many teachers could you hire if you got rid of, let's see, 26 of them make over 200. That's $2.6 million a year right there. And then you add in the chief of staff, and you're getting neighborhood of $3 million annually. Now, that's just not counting the people who make $150,000. You get to that number, how many teachers could you hire for that? We need to pay teachers more. Throw money at the education system, and guess who gets a lot of the splatter? It's the people who already have a lot of money. It's weird how that works. Anyway, I want to shift gears to the White House press corps and how they have. There was a tragedy, an accident that happened in Gaza the other day, where an aid worker's truck van was hit, right? And the people were killed. And you go, no, that's terrible. And it is terrible. It's the group that's run by, I can't remember, like Jose something or other, runs a bunch of restaurants in Washington, D.C. Big lib. Always, you know, he's great when there's a tragedy or whatever, but he's also a big lib. Sends food in there. I'm not judging him based on that. But the idea that Israel would go, you know what, the World Central Kitchen, we're going to bomb the hell out of them because we don't want them making meals for Palestinians is absurd. You really have to be a special. You have to believe the level of insanity and conspiracy theories that, like, you know, that no Jews showed up to work in the World Trade Center on 9/11. You have to be that level of conspiracy nut to believe that Israel is bombing aid. There's one van out there with seven people in it that are going to go and feed some people. Let's kill them. Let's do it. Meanwhile, they're allowing in truckloads of food. They're allowing in airdrops of food. But one van somewhere, we've got to do something about that. And you go, well, you know, the left will say they did target the van. It wasn't an accident. They hit the van. Yeah, they did. They're investigating it. See, the difference is Israel accidentally kills civilians, and they announce that they accidentally killed civilians, and they're going to investigate this. Hamas deliberately targets civilians, claims credit for it, and the left immediately condemns Israel for it. Oh, what did Israel do to deserve this punch? Israel is looking into how this happened. Now, if I had to speculate right now, which I'm loath to do, but I'm going to anyway, is if you're looking at a situation where they bombed the hell out of a van with the World Central. I love how they're like, it was marked World Central Kitchen. Okay, if you're like looking at it from a satellite or a drone, do you really notice the logo that much? But even if you do, you're dealing with Hamas, who uses one of their main modes of transportation for explosives and terrorists is ambulances. They wrap themselves in civilians and then drive around in ambulances and make their deliveries. Why? Because it's an ambulance. That way, when Israel sees, oh, you're loading explosives from that ambulance, let's blow it up. And they blow up the thing. What is the story? Hamas immediately goes, they're attacking ambulances. Can you believe they're attacking ambulances? And of course, the Associated Press and Reuters immediately regurgitate that. The media is all over it. They're attacking ambulances. These heartless Jews are blah, 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 blah. That's happening with this accident, attack, whatever you care to call it, on 7 civilians. It's horrible. It's horrible. Israel is looking into it. Israel has admitted that it was a mistake, and they're going to find out how the mistake happened. I suspect it had something to do with faulty intelligence that said that these vans, this van marked with it, were actually transporting terrorists, Hamas leaders, whatever. It happens. But the media is not willing to give the benefit of the doubt. Just like you watch. There, I have, how many clips do I have here? 8 clips from the White House press briefing yesterday. This is all about, what about Israel? Can we punish Israel? Can we get Israel? Then some of the people, some of the so-called journalists literally are saying, can we punish Israel for this? I don't remember the last time there was a question at the White House press briefing about the hostages. There's still American hostages. There's still more than 100 hostages being held, being tortured, ones that haven't been murdered already. There is no concern in the press about them. But every piece of propaganda put out by Hamas is reported as though it's the gospel truth. We had UN employees working with Hamas to facilitate the October 7th attack, and that's not a story anymore. Did you notice that? It was like, oh, yeah, no, this is terrible. We're going to look into it, and then it's gone. It's done. There's no pressing. There's no questioning in the White House press corps about maybe we should cut off funding to this. Should we cut off funding to this? Has the president considered cutting off funding to this? Has the president considered threatening to cut off funding to the United Nations because this appendage of it was involved in helping coordinate the attack on October the 7th? Anything? No. Nothing. But an accident. Now, I'll tell you, this October 7th is a while ago, right? It's almost April 7th. So you got October, November, December, January, February, March. You're looking at 7 months here. You haven't heard a whole lot of stories about this. You've heard stories about civilians being killed, and a lot of them have ended up being garbage. If you notice, weirdly, the number of dead has fluctuated downward, even from official Gazan sources. It was 100,000, then it's 30,000. Now they're back down to around 20,000. Okay, maybe, maybe not. I'm just not going to believe any of them. But what you haven't heard is, oh, they're targeting this group. They killed 1,000. They tried it. 500 people killed in a hospital when a hospital was attacked. And then it turns out that it was one of their own bombs and it landed in a parking lot near a hospital and nobody was killed. But the lie got around the world. It took 3 days for somebody to go, hey, you know what? We should probably send somebody to that hospital and see if it's blown up. Because this is the most densely packed hospital in the whole freaking world if 500 people got killed from one bomb. So you haven't heard a whole bunch of, they killed a school bus full of children. They bombed this. You hear, there's looming famine. What the hell is looming famine? Well, people could be getting hungry. Okay, but they're not hungry now. Yeah, but they don't know. It's like with food insecurity in this country. We're a nation that's morbidly obese, but somehow millions upon millions of tens of millions of people deal with food insecurity. Food insecurity. Why? Because we don't have starvation in this country. We have too much of the opposite, as a matter of fact. We go for a little starvation. We go for a little bit of roughage, maybe dial back the Doritos a little bit and go with a salad. But we don't have starvation in this country. So they came up with food insecurity, which is you don't know where your next meal's coming from. Well, hell, that's been most of my life, right? It's anybody who's ever worked paycheck to paycheck, that's their life. Did you realize you were suffering from food insecurity? Did it paralyze you? No. But again, you control the unit of measure. You control everything. So they create a unit of measure. They can't illustrate a problem they wish we had. So they create a new one that doesn't exist and put it off into the future. Food insecurity is you're worried about where your next meal is coming from. Or you will soon be worried about where your next meal is coming from. Huh. Well, there's a looming famine in Gaza, they say. So there's no famine in Gaza, but there's looming. There's looming famine everywhere. A swarm of locusts could take out a bunch of crops, and there'd be looming famine and hunger. There'd be all sorts of problems that we could face. You want to live that way? I mean, my God, you'll be paralyzed with fear your whole life. You'll never get anything. That's fine. It's your life. Go ahead and ruin it. But it's best. Everybody can walk out and get hit in the head with a meteorite and killed. Do you never go outside? Do you wear a hard hat all the time? Or do you just go, well, that's part of life. You kind of got to go and push through it. But the press is really pissed off at Israel for this accident. It had to be deliberate. What would be the upside? What would be the upside to Israel? Look at those people making sandwiches. Bastards, let's kill them. What's the upside to that? What was amazing to me is not that there was anti-Semitism in the ranks of the White House press corps. They're progressives. They're leftists. That's where anti-Semitism lives. That's the cow manure, the monkey kidneys in which the virus of hatred genuinely reproduces, where it lives. But just how open they are about it, how unambiguous they are about it, how shameless they are about it. This first clip is Selena Wang. Selena Wang is the senior ABC News White House correspondent. She's the senior one, which I never heard of her before, but you know, you would assume with the title senior White House correspondent for ABC News that she'd have some kind of track record. Apparently she was a CNN correspondent and worked at Bloomberg TV. People fail up on the left. She is outraged over this, and she desperately wants the United States to condemn Netanyahu because liberals hate Benjamin Netanyahu and cut off aid to Israel. Do something. They need to pay for this wrong in their minds.
On the death of those World Central Kitchen aid workers, which includes one American who was killed, Netanyahu's reaction was, quote, it happens in war. What is your reaction to that comment from Netanyahu?
I don't think it'd be useful for me to get into a tit for tat here with the Prime Minister of Israel from the podium. We've been very clear about our expectations for this investigation. We noted that the Prime Minister said himself there will be an investigation. So has his military said that. We look forward to that investigation being thorough and swiftly done. And as I said, that it'll be transparent, the results of it, and that if there's accountability that needs to be had, that it will be had.
What is your response to that? He said this happens in war. And you say it in such a way. This happens in war. S happens. Well, yeah, it does happen in war. Right? Civilians get killed in war all the time. War is hell. That's probably why you shouldn't, this is the number one or number two reason why you shouldn't start a war. Right? If you care at all about your citizens, you don't start a war because a bunch of them are going to get killed. But I highly doubt Netanyahu, there's no audio of it, and he mostly speaks, when he speaks domestically, he speaks in Hebrew. I doubt he's going, well, what do you say about the seven people who were killed? S happens. What are you going to do? It's war. I highly doubt it was that dismissive of a tone. He may think that way, but he's a skilled politician. He's not tone deaf, like allegedly Selena Wang. I'm looking her up. She's apparently 30 years old. She's somehow the senior White House correspondent. She's barely finished puberty, but she's the senior White House correspondent for ABC News, fresh out of college, hates Israel because she keeps going back to that well. She wants to know, how can you trust those damn dirty Jews after this?
But how can you take Netanyahu at his word? As Nancy was saying, this was a deconflicted zone. They had marked their car. They had even coordinated their movements. with the IDF?
Yeah, and as I said in my opening statement, obviously, setting aside this incident, because this isn't the first one, there are issues of deconfliction that clearly need to be fleshed out and improved.
How do you trust that stinking Jew again? Look, it was, okay, mistakes happened. Yeah, but how do you, well, he admitted mistakes happened. You know, it's, you seem to be very upset about seven people tragically killed accidentally. You pissed at all about the 1,200 civilians who were deliberately targeted? That were the express targets of Hamas, why this whole thing started? History did not start on October 8th. It started long before then and includes October 7th, but not to these people. Not to these people. She, Selena Wang, desperately wants aid to Israel, any aid to Israel, cut off. I don't know what other takeaway you can get from this one.
So how can the U.S. continue to send aid to Israel without any conditions? Yes, they have a right.
We're not sending aid to Israel. We're sending aid into Gaza, and that's
weapons. How can they? How can the U.S. continue to send military aid
military
to
assistance.
Israel without any conditions? Is there no red line that
you
can cross?
You know, we've had this discussion, you and me, quite a bit from up here. They're still under a viable threat of Hamas. We're still going to make sure that they can defend themselves and that 7th of October doesn't happen again. That doesn't mean that it's a free pass, that we look the other way when something like this happens, or that we aren't and haven't since the beginning of the conflict urged the Israelis to be more precise, to be more careful, and quite frankly, to increase the amount of humanitarian assistance that gets in. I haven't been asked about it yet, but I expect that I would be. You know, there was a discussion just yesterday with our Israeli counterparts about Rafah. Now, this one was done virtually. We expect there'll be an in-person meeting here in a week's time or so. But the whole reason to have that meeting was to talk about our concerns over a major ground operation in Rafah and to present viable alternatives for them to be more precise and more targeted. So the idea that we're some plastic graveyard here and we're not paying attention to the civilian casualties or the civilian suffering is just not true.
Right, but these are verbal urgings, verbal commitments. There's no other incentive besides the urgings.
I know. You want us to hang some sort of condition over their neck. And what I'm telling you is that we continue to work with the Israelis to make sure that they are as precise as they can be and that more aid's getting in, and we're going to continue to take that approach.
Hey, you love it. Kirby, I'm not often on Kirby's side, but it's like I feel like we've had this conversation a lot, you and I. Yeah, because she really hates Jews. She despises Benjamin Netanyahu. She's on Team Hamas. And you sit there, and if you're sitting there in the press briefing room, you go, tone it down a little bit. What can we do? What can we facilitate to make sure that Israel is finally cut off? How can we do this? Please give us a step-by-step guide so that we might facilitate this to happen so that we can finally rid ourselves of these stinking bastards. You'd think the other people in the press briefing room would go, okay. Ground well covered. No. No. You heard her refer to the people who went before her. They continued to go. Next up is a woman called Nadia Bilbassi. She is from Al Arabiya, which is funded out of Saudi Arabia. She's pissed off that Israel dared kill some Iranian terrorist leaders in Syria. Again, how dare Israel go ahead? Now, honestly, we should have done this. We should have had the sack to do this, like we did with Soleimani. But Joe Biden is too busy apologizing for killing Soleimani to even contemplate this. Listen to her back and forth. This is, again, not an activist. It's a journalist.
Mr. Kirby, Israel has killed a senior Hamas leader in Beirut with precision weapons in an area where thousands of civilians were there. They killed senior Iranian officials in Damascus, in the heart of Damascus. It was serious. There were thousands of civilians there as well. Does it make sense to you that a vehicle marked with World Central Kitchen, after coordinating with the Israelis, that they didn't see it? And doesn't this debunk your theory and defense of Israel, that it is difficult for them because Hamas embedded with the civilian population, where they can go after Hamas leaders in the heart of the civilian population in Beirut and in Damascus?
To your second question, no, it's not my theory. I have talked about, I've talked about this for months now. Fighting in an urban, highly populated, condensed environment like that's tough. But they have taken strikes against Hamas leaders in, successfully taken strikes against Hamas leaders in Gaza. I can't speak to what happened in Damascus. That I can only tell you that the United States wasn't involved. So I'm not going to talk about the details of that whatsoever. I'm telling you that they have taken precise strikes against Hamas in Gaza. They have also taken strikes that have been not precise. It looks as if, very clearly, what happened yesterday is one of those examples. They'll investigate that. And our expectation is, and we've made this clear to them, that they'll come clean about what they've learned. They'll be fully transparent, and if people need to be held accountable, that they'll be held accountable.
And they're targeting Hamas leaders and civilian population. Oh, you mean that, like, the Hamas leaders actually targeted civilian populations, right? And they blew up the Iranian guy pretty specifically, right? Every once in a while, one of those goes astray. But it does demonstrate that Israel is trying to target the enemy, whereas Hamas is trying to target any Israeli. Right? Again, this was a White House press briefing. These are members in good standing of the White House Correspondents Association. And you sit there and you think, well, this is, all right, that's enough. These people need to stop taking bites at this apple. No. No, it's a big-ass apple, and they keep biting at it. So now we continue down the rabbit hole of the White House press corps. We've already heard from Selena Wang, Nadia Bidelbassi from Al Arabiya, and now we go over to the Hill. Niles, you people over in the UK, the... all the UK, Northern Ireland is part of the UK. And your names, you started the language. You got to come to, is it Neil, Nile? I don't know. Is there two different names? Is it just a way to pronounce the same thing differently? I just don't know. But N-I-A-L-L. I'm going to go with Nile on this one. Nile Stange, S-T-A-N-G-E. He is from the Hill, but he is from Ireland. Now, these clips, I've cut out John Kirby's answers, because honestly, John Kirby's answers are less important at this point. It is the sameness of the questions and the anti-Israeli sentiment in the questions that I want to highlight here. So this guy gets three questions. Here's the first one.
I just wanted to follow up with a question that came from the front row about the conditions of military aid. And you said that the questioner wanted you to hang some conditions over their necks, that the Israelis. And your tone suggested you wouldn't do that. Why not?
Why? Why don't you hang things over their necks? Why won't you make them responsible? Why don't you do this? Why won't you do that? Well, what do you care? Are you a journalist? Why won't you? I want to hurt some Jews. Won't you do it? Treat them like Catholics, man. Good Lord. Now, why won't you? What kind of a question is that? There was a time when people were fired for this kind of stupidity. Of course, there was a time when people never would have gotten into this position with this sort of stupidity. They weren't done. They weren't done. Next one is the same guy.
Well, on the point of conditions, the president on February 8th issued a memo. And it said, and you already know this, but just for context, it said that it was the policy of this administration to prevent arms transfers that risk facilitating or otherwise contributing to violations of human rights or international humanitarian law. Is firing a missile at people delivering food and killing them not a violation of international humanitarian law?
You gotta love it. You're not supposed to be saying, is it firing? Now, if you get me a videotape or an audio tape or any kind of proof where you're sitting around and there's a whole bunch of members of the Israeli Defense Forces and they go, look at that, there's a Domino's car, blow it up, kill it, then I would agree with you. But this guy is not only assuming facts not in evidence, he has convicted Israel and is calling for their execution, essentially. They don't give them arms. You know, there are a lot of countries in this world that won't help Israel out, won't sell them munitions. Forget just giving them to nothing. They won't sell them. Why? Because they don't like Jews. They're progressive countries. And the Democrats and the media, although I repeat myself, are desperately scrambling to try to make the United States into one of them. If Joe Biden, look, the polling in Michigan, we'll get to polling, I guess, in a minute. The polling in Michigan has Donald Trump up by 3, I think. Not exclusively because, but in large part, or certainly at least in a part, because of Joe Biden's bad numbers in Dearborn and Hamtramck, where the concentration of Muslims is greater than anywhere outside the Middle East. It's where I used to live. It is, they're not fans right now. Now, will a lot of them come home? Of course. Of course they will. It's easy to tell a pollster, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to write my dog's name in, I'm going to do whatever it is. It's really easy in April to tell a pollster you're not going to go and vote for somebody. But then when the chips are down and you think, oh man, somebody's going to do this, that, or the other thing, and things are getting real, most of those people will come home. Most of those, the same with all the people grousing about Trump. Most of those people will come home. Not all of them, but most of them. So to sit there and whine and complain about it's just unbelievable. Although totally believable, I guess I should say. He wasn't done. This, I've got one more to go here, right? With Niall Stranger thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He comes back and takes another bite at this. He's really, really not a fan of Israel.
They have never violated international humanitarian law ever in the past 5 to 6 months.
I'm telling you, the State Department has looked at incidents in the past and has yet to determine that any of those incidents violate international humanitarian law.
Never. They've never done this. Why? You know who has? I can unambiguously tell you who has, Niall. If you're at all interested in... I made the mistake of believing that he was interested in the concept. Hamas did on October the 7th when they killed 1,200 Israeli civilians, most of whom were just minding their own business, music festivals, living in their homes, whatever. Yeah, that's a violation of international humanitarian law if you're not familiar with it. I know you... You probably don't even remember what happened on October the 7th. It was so long ago. You can't remember a day past the 8th. But, you know, it's weird how certain things cause outrage and other things don't. Hamas is still to this day indiscriminately firing rockets and missiles and projectiles and pretty much anything. They'd fire civilians into it if they thought they'd do some damage into Israel. Just randomly, hey, Israel's over that way. All right, shoot. Let's see what happens. That doesn't cause outrage. They're still holding more than 100 people hostage, including 2 Americans. That doesn't even warrant a freaking question from the White House press corps. But in a pretty obvious accident, and if there's evidence to the contrary, I'm happily going to change my mind, but a pretty obvious accident is the subject of at least 8 straight questions and demands for accountability. You don't know what I don't know. This is the typical liberal mindset. There's been a horrible tragedy. Well, I don't know what happened, but I know what we should do about it. What? Yeah, no, there was a shooting at a mall. Oh, that's horrible. Well, what nobody asked what happens. Well, we know how to fix this problem. Then it turns out, oh, it's a trans activist who's sort of very upset that somebody at Sephora misgendered them. Oh, all right, well, never mind. What shooting? Shooting what? They're shooting a movie at the mall? I don't know. I'm not interested in Hollywood. Moving on. It's kind of how it works. One last trip around the globe with the White House press corps. This is Andrew Feinberg. He's I believe he's an American, but he writes for the UK Independent. You got to understand the press corps is a wildly incestuous group. they truly, genuinely are. They date each other, they marry each other, they sleep with each other, they hire each other. So you get the U.S. outlet with a guy from Northern Ireland, and they're going, oh, what about the Jews? Can we do something about these stinking Jews? They're everywhere. They're controlling Hollywood and the banks. We've got to do something. And then you can have the dumb American working for the U.K. left-wing paper because it's left-wing. National borders don't mean anything to these people. Their property line matters a whole hell of a lot. You go trespassing on their stuff, then suddenly they will understand the concept of private property and borders, but they will not respect, and they don't matter professionally when it comes to work. Again, Andrew Feinberg, UK's Independent.
John, you described the strike as a possible mistake by Israel. According to Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, it wasn't one strike, but three. The first one, then an interval during which aid workers got out of their vehicles, removed the wounded, tried to move to another vehicle, which was struck, and then a third strike as they tried to move and escape in a third vehicle, at which point all of them were dead. How would the second and third strikes of these marked vehicles be a mistake? And why would the U.S. not more forcefully set conditions on the use of U.S.-made weaponry when it is being used to target aid workers? If the first one was a mistake, the second two were targeted with the intent of killing everyone in that convoy. So how do you respond to that?
It's just so damn stupid. These people are not critical thinkers. You targeted the van. Well, what, did pizzas come flying onto the van and somebody go, oh my God, I made a horrible mistake. Well, now I've got to kill them all so the world never finds out. Or do you think the van was possibly targeted because they thought that it was in fact transporting somebody that they, or people that they should be targeting? And then when those people came out of the van and got into another vehicle, they thought, well, do we try to just wound terrorists? Do we try to activate their AAA membership? Or do we try to exterminate them? Which would explain, since the answer is obviously the latter, that would explain the subsequent attacks, would it not? I'm pretty sure it would. But this, Andrew Feinberg is sitting there going, Jesus, it's just one of life's great mysteries. I don't really fully understand what's going on here. Yeah, okay, once is an accident, but twice. No, if you're trying to kill terrorists, you don't go, well, we gave it a shot. What are you going to do? That's not how it works. I know it's a foreign concept to these leftists because so many of their fellow travelers, so many of their brothers in arms are terrorists, but my God, how do you sit there and ask these stupid questions? Obviously, once they realized that they'd hit a pizza van or whatever, they then said, we must kill these people. Like they set out. Now, again, I'm open to the prospect that I'm wrong. If you can find me some kind of proof that says Israel today sent down from Prime Minister Netanyahu, go and kill me some aid workers, I would turn my opinion around on a dime. I would publicly apologize to the Selena Wangs, the Nadia Bilbazis, the Niall Stanges, whatever, strange without the R, and Andrew Feinbergs of the world. But do you think these people will ever accept when the results come back and it's what I'm saying? Do you think their audiences will ever hear the end result? Do you think that, well, you know, a thorough investigation by third parties and blah, blah, blah demonstrate that this was a horrible mistake, that they were given intelligence that this, you know, because let me speculate a bit further just so I can be on record in case anybody ever bothers to report on what their discovery is. Hamas is not above using civilians as human shields. In fact, that's part of their MO. Like I said, they would launch them into Israel if they thought they would do any damage to Israel. Maybe a source or somebody, I mean, maybe a phone call was made and said, Hamas is loading up this van. with arms or with people or whatever, and they're sending it off. Maybe they were tipped off to this. Maybe Hamas wanted this van targeted. Because there's no upside for Israel in it, but there is an upside for the propagandist left. So if you think about things rationally, the easiest answer, the most obvious, is usually the right answer. So it's either an accident, saving that. It was a inside job, an op, where Hamas got word through their, they can get word to each other. So, look, there's going to be somebody out there. So, I'm a traitor. I'm a whatever. I want to help you out. I hate Hamas. This van's going to be moving on this road this time. It's going to be full of a bunch of terrorists. And, you know, you might be able to read the logo on the side of a van, but you can't read the intent inside it. You can't read the people inside of it. And you're not going to be able to read people's faces in real time. You've got a choice. You have been told reliably from somebody who's fed you information before that this van is filled with people who are trying to do harm. They need to be stopped. And so you go and you try to stop them. That seems like the most rational explanation beyond it's just an accident. Somebody thought that, or somebody was told that. Those are the two options. As for what the White House press corps is, I don't know what the hell that is. Again, just to put a button on this one, not a single question about hostages. Not a single question about American hostages. No concern whatsoever. It is, can't we hang this around Israel's neck? Can't we string them up? Can't we finally rid ourselves of the Jewish scourge? There aren't that many of them left in the world. Can we finally have done with them? Yeah. Who do you work for again? Oh, NBC News. That makes sense. I want to shift gears here to a little bit of a historical issue, because we have issues with history. It's not being taught. It's not being taught properly. It is being bastardized. It is being rewritten in real time right in front of our eyes. Because, well, honestly, the truth doesn't help Democrats. The truth doesn't help Democrats. And when the truth doesn't help Democrats, they simply ignore the truth. That's just how it works. And they can do so in comfort, with the comfort of knowing that who's going to call them out. They control the profession that would be the closest thing to calling them out. So they don't have to worry. It's just like Joe Biden can lie with impunity, because who's going to say, wait a second, dude, that's not right. You can't do that. That's not how it is. You don't have to worry about such things. So you go a little crazy. You make yourself a central figure in the civil rights movement, for example. That sort of garbage. Everything that Joe does, he's the Forrest Gump of American presidents. He's everywhere. He's everywhere. Except he's not anywhere. He's nowhere there. And so we come to out. I've seen these things on social media. They're AJ Plus. It's an account. It's got like a million some followers. It's big on TikTok. It's big on all Instagram, all this stuff. So they got millions of followers. And AJ Plus, I didn't know what it was until I saw this video about the release of the movie Oppenheimer in Japan. And I looked it up, and it turns out that it's the social media appendage of one of them, of Al Jazeera. I've appeared on Al Jazeera a lot. A lot of fine people at Al Jazeera. I've dealt with them. I've worked with them. They're fine. But as an organization, not the highest standards, I would say. And so they had this reporter talking about how the movie Oppenheimer just recently opened up in Japan. Like, okay. Now, I could see that maybe it wouldn't seem like a natural hit for Japan. It's about the building of the atomic bomb in World War II. And you probably know what the movie's about by now. You likely have seen it. I've seen it, too. It's an excellent movie. It's just long and boring. It's not boring, but, I mean, it's like you don't need to see it again. Once you got it, you got it. but it's, you know, largely historically accurate. And of course, the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are historical facts. They brought to an end World War II. Ever since then, the left has been trying to insist that, well, we didn't have to drop them. We only dropped them to demonstrate to the Soviets that we had these bombs. We only dropped them because these are brown people or yellow, whatever color. They're not white people. And that's why we did it. We're horrible, horrible racist people, blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows the spin. It's not true, of course. Japan started World War II with us. They bombed Pearl Harbor. The left has then tried to say that, well, we weren't sending them oil. Well, and that was a hostile act. It's weird how the left will say that we should have funded the Japanese war machine. We should have fed the Japanese war machine while simultaneously telling us, do not send any aid to Israel. Do not send any. It's weird. They have no consistency because they have no core. They have a set of political beliefs and they'll do whatever they have to do. Sell out at whatever they have to sell out to get there. So this video was making the rounds yesterday, probably still is today, about how we did not have to drop the bombs, how dropping the bombs was racist, how, of course, America is racist. We're using these people as experiments, blah, 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 you name it. And, of course, it's a left-wing trope. So this girl, and I call her a girl derisively because she looks like she's about 15 serving as a reporter. She calls it a historian. Again, this is the problem with Al Jazeera and much of media. They hire somebody who just out of college because they can afford them. And then they're edited by people who are just out of college because they can afford them. And nobody knows anything, and history begins anew every morning. This history is a woman named Naoko Wake. She is a professor in the Social Science College at Michigan State University. Now, what is she a professor of? Well, she's a historian of gender, sexuality, and illness in the 20th century. Now, if you want to talk about, now she happens to be, I believe, Japanese. But if you want to talk about the history of World War II, why the hell would you talk to somebody who's a historian of gender, sexuality, and illness in the 20th century? What sense does that make? It doesn't make any sense, except that you had an agenda you wanted to push. And this person who wrote a book about it has an agenda they want to push. And so you come together like chocolate and peanut butter. Again, this non-historian, she's in the sociology department. She is not a historian, despite the fact that she's called a historian in this report. She wrote a book called American Survivors, Trans-Pacific Memories of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Why am I harping on this? Because it's so... this whole thing is so flat out wrong. Now, you and I will hear this and go, that's stupid. Who believes this crap? The next generation of voters believes this crap, ladies and gentlemen. The next generation of voters gets their information from people like this, from outlets like this, in this forum. It's a 3-minute long clip, and it is so wrong on so many levels and whitewashes history in a way that, you know, it is amazing. You almost marvel at it. You almost marvel at it, but I don't think it's doing it deliberately. I don't think this girl is doing this deliberately. I think she genuinely doesn't know. I think she has genuinely been misinformed by everybody who's educated her throughout her life and has been trained to specifically not engage in critical thinking in any way, shape, or form, and do not question anything. She looks at that bumper sticker and says, question authority, and gets confused, frozen like a deer in headlights, unsure of what the concept is. How bad could it be? Derek, you're building this up. Can't be that bad.
All right, so I just finished watching Oppenheimer like thousands of other people, and there's something the movie didn't get into. Let me explain. The movie doesn't outright challenge the decision to use the bombs against Japanese civilians. It's actually in line with the US refusal to confront crimes committed against Japan and the justification that the bombs were necessary to end the war.
Okay, so I called up this historian, Naoko Wake, who's talked to dozens of survivors who can give us better context.
It's a very limited one aspect of the history of the bomb. They don't want to raise any questions about the accepted notion of World War II as a good war. We still depend on it, right?
Under international law today, those two nuclear attacks are by definition war crimes. Why? Because the majority of victims at Hiroshima and Nagasaki were civilians. The bombings killed around 200,000 people, and
many of them suffered long-term radiation illnesses. Those types of cancer do not show up until decades later. Many of them decided not to have family at all. They didn't want to have children because they were afraid of deformity.
Now let's not forget, the US is literally the only country ever to use nuclear weapons in war. And after 78 years, not a single US president has apologized to the victims.
So he's in Japan, in Hiroshima, and that's fine. Just as long as he doesn't apologize, it's absolutely fine. Who cares?
Do you feel like the US has ever taken accountability for what they have done?
No. The US government refused to recognize their existence, not to mention their suffering. They instead use survivors as guinea pigs. They use them as research subjects.
Why do you think the US is so adamant to not take accountability on this issue?
Because it exposes the fact that so-called good war, the image of World War II as glorious war, to lose that is very much a threat against America's national interest as well as national security.
By the way, this isn't limited to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This fits perfectly with America's pattern of avoiding accountability for crimes committed. I mean, take a look at the Marshall Islands. The people there say the government has not fairly compensated them for the lasting health and environmental effects of 67 nuclear bomb tests.
My fellow historian, Rans Wengenberg, he mentioned something that's a stereotypically American thing to do is to bomb people and later on ask them how they feel.
So yes, Oppenheimer is a historical film, but the threat posed by nuclear weapons is all too relevant. 9 countries currently possess thousands of nuclear weapons, with the United States and Russia having about 90% of them. So why does it matter how the US talks about Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Well, if the US avoids reckoning with its past usage of nuclear weapons, it raises the concern of how they may be used in the future, and against whom.
Oh yeah, now this genius over there, trying to get to this moron's name, Anna Kook. Fitting. Anna K-O-O-K. Yeah, so what about this? This fits perfectly with the... Now, she is, I don't know if she's a correspondent in Japan or if she just lives in Japan. She appears to be Japanese. But everything in that is wrong. Everything in that is wrong. It's really easy to sit there and go, we didn't have to drop these bombs. We didn't have to. Okay. Then go ahead and pick 100,000 to 1 million people, Americans, to die. Well, it's, 80 years later. There's nobody left, or very few people left. We just lost the last survivor of the attack on Pearl Harbor on the USS Arizona. There's nobody left. But at the time, these weren't abstract historical rewriting questions. These were reality-based decisions. That could we have taken Japan? Of course we could have taken Japan. It would have taken a long time. They were the ones who were committed to making sure that every last man, woman, and child fought to their death to resist the evil, evil Americans. They were the ones that had so propagandized and brainwashed their own people that not only did they believe their emperor was God, but that they were throwing themselves off of cliffs to their death so as to not be taken prisoner. When in reality, the only prisoners who needed to worry about their health, safety, and lives were the prisoners taken by the Japanese army. They murdered tens of thousands of prisoners of war in clear violation of every rule of law, of every law, international law. There's no mention of that in this report. There's no mention of Pearl Harbor in this. The Bataan Death March, where they just killed people. They just marched them for 1,000 miles, just killed them. Starvation, dehydration, death. If you were in uniform and you were to be taken prisoner, you'd much rather be taken prisoner by the Germans in World War II. The Germans were brutal, but they had nothing on the Japanese. They were horrible monsters, racist towards not only Americans and British, but towards Koreans, towards Chinese. They brutalized and killed millions upon millions of people for no reason other than they viewed them as subhuman. They viewed themselves as superior. This is all, again, whitewashed. Oh my God, you dropped a bomb on civilian populations. Yeah, they slaughtered civilian populations. They didn't do it with bombing. They did it with their bare hands. They imprisoned people. They enslaved people. They are not the victims. They are the perps. But we have this sickness in the left, in this country and around the world, that needs to make the United States the enemy. So you ignore everything that there possibly is, and you go, well, we should have gone in another way. There's island upon island. They fought brutally. Thousands upon thousands and tens of thousands of Americans were killed over patches of land that were not populated. The Japanese homeland had been bombed, but Hiroshima and Nagasaki had been largely untouched. We told them, surrender or else. They said no. So we bombed Hiroshima. We told them, surrender or we'll do this to every city that is left in Japan. And knowing what had happened to Hiroshima, their answer was still no. Some will say, well, they were trying to get their bearings. They were trying to figure out what the hell. Hiroshima got leveled. That's their bearings. That's what happened. You don't need to figure it out. Hiroshima was there. Now Hiroshima's not there. There's a lot of people dead. The city is destroyed. They're saying they're going to do it to another one. You don't get to, well, give me a week and I'll figure it out. I'll get back to you eventually. Don't worry. I'm working on an answer right now. I need to run through the editorial process. No, that's not how it works. Unconditional surrender was the only thing that was acceptable. It was the only thing that was acceptable. Not to the left, of course, they wanted unconditional surrender of the United States. But unconditional surrender was the only, what else would there be? Okay, you can keep big chunks of China, you can keep killing people over in Korea, we'll ignore all of that. As long as you stop being mean to us, we can all agree to disagree. No, unconditional surrender was the only option. We got it in Germany. We got it in Japan. We got it in Japan after we dropped another bomb on Nagasaki and said, we're coming for more. We will do this everywhere unless and until you unconditionally surrender. They didn't know we didn't have any more. They didn't need to know. They knew what we did. They knew we were serious, and they surrendered. And then the true horror of what the Japanese had done during World War II has come to light. And it's weird. It's come to light. It came to light almost immediately, and then it was immediately shoved back in the dark. We know the atrocities of the Nazis, not only in the Holocaust, but in general to civilians, and the cost of life in Europe, and the number of people killed and the brutal ways in which they were killed. We all know that. We don't know the history of Japan's cruelty, which if a tie or Japan wins, honestly, with Germany. There is no great war epic about the Bataan Death March. There should be, but you can't do it anymore. You can't do it anymore because you can't make an honest movie about World War II. Remember the outrage when they were making that movie about Pearl Harbor about 20 years ago, Ben Affleck and Kate Beckinsale and whatever, bad movie. But about Pearl Harbor, like, oh, this is going to upset. This could be. We don't want, and the left immediately does what they always do. We want to make sure that a whole bunch of Americans don't go out and start attacking Japanese people. Didn't happen. The only people who ever attacked Japanese people were the Democrats and FDR when they put them in internment camps on the West Coast. But that's, again, something that is forgotten about history, buried by history, being rewritten by history. The Bataan Death March story should be told, but it's not. There are not great documentaries and a flood of documentaries. Like World War II, I'm guilty of it. I'm more interested in the European theater than I am the Pacific theater because there's better information out there. It's documentaries. There's the Band of Brothers. Great, the Pacific just didn't do it for me. It's partially because the islands were largely unpopulated and it was, you know, just fighting in the jungle. There was no backdrop of interest. But it's also part because Hollywood will only make these things with one hand tied behind their back. They don't want to make, look, if they make a movie about the truth about what Japan did during World War II, they're going to catch hell from their own. Who's going to release it? Who's going to star in it? Nobody's going to make, no, it won't happen. It should happen. We should honor the people who were brutalized and murdered by the Japanese Imperial Army, but we won't. We can't because of political correctness. So we get crap like this from Al Jazeera and Anna Cook, who looks like she's about 15. And, oh, you know, this is what the United States never takes responsibility for anything. They never apologize for dropping the bomb. Never. Nor should we. It ended the war. Well, it killed a lot of civilians. How many civilians do you think would have died in an invasion of Japan? I know it's pretty clear you don't care about the Americans who would have died from the invasion of Japan, but what about the civilians? How many do you think that would be? Do you care? Do you think the number of civilians invading the hundreds of islands that make up Japan, the number of civilians killed under those circumstances and used as fodder, or just committing suicide because of the propaganda from the Japanese military, do you think that number would have been greater or less than the number of civilians killed in Nagasaki and Hiroshima? Which one do you think it is? It's clear that you don't care about the number of Americans, even if it were up to 1 million. You don't care. But you seem to care desperately about the civilians. How many civilians do you think it would have cost? Now, I'm not doing this because of a cost-benefit analysis. I'm pointing this out because of the hypocrisy of the left. I think the decision was absolutely right. It was completely justified, and history bears that out. But then again, I'm not Anna Cook. I'm not a kook at all. I am a relatively intelligent human being who can think critically about things, who can see things and go, well, this is the way to go. You don't want none, don't start none. And that's how I view what's going on in the Middle East. You can start a war and then immediately go, can you believe they're fighting a war against us? Yes, I can. Well, they won't stop. They've killed more civilians. They've killed more people than we did. It's not a zero-sum game, pal. It's not scales. We're not trying to get them in balance. We're trying to wipe you out. That's just how it works. You don't want none, don't start none. Think of all the money and energy that Hamas has wasted trying to destroy Israel over the past 20 years since they took over in Gaza, since they were elected in Gaza. The thousands and thousands of miles of tunnels that they built. Israel wasn't bombing farms and ranches, and yet they're on the verge of famine, we're told. Maybe the priority should have been building up an infrastructure so they could feed themselves for a little bit of time rather than so they could launch bombs at Jews and their leadership can live large with hookers and everything else that comes with a five-star resort. Just saying. Just a thought. I want to play you a clip from Morning Joe. I know it's Morning Joe, sorry, but I want to play you a clip from Morning Joe, Claire McCaskill, and the delusions of the left about Donald Trump. There's a piece in The Atlantic today I'm not going to bore you with, but it is about, it's by Jeffrey Goldberg, who's the editor-in-chief over there. He's the guy who said that Donald Trump didn't want to go to Normandy on the anniversary of D-Day because those are suckers who died for the country. They're suckers. And everybody in the room, even the people who hated Trump, said he didn't say anything like that. The Secret Service made the call because the weather would not allow for the helicopter to fly over there. And driving for 2 hours in a presidential motorcade in rural France is just too logistically impossible to do. But that didn't stop The Atlantic, Jeffrey Gold. It's amazing how immune from the truth the media is when it comes to Donald Trump. Really, really is. So now he's back with another one, a study in cowardice, a study in Senate cowardice. Republicans like Rob Portman could have ended Donald Trump's political career. They chose not to. Again, with the people who insist this is what democracy looks like, demanding that democracy be subverted. Anyway, the gang over at Morning Joe was all talking about this, and they bring in Claire McCaskill, the failed senator from Missouri, tossed out on her rear end after one term, very wealthy woman, family owns a private jet. Her husband's, well, very rich because, of course, she's been involved in politics her whole life. It's weird. My wife should go into politics so I can get rich. I start a consulting firm and I just get rich. She's sitting in her multi-million-dollar home in front of her very nice kitchen, and she wants to talk about how she knows Mitch McConnell so well. I can't guarantee you she hadn't talked to Mitch McConnell in probably 10 years. But she knows Mitch McConnell so well that Mitch McConnell thought that Donald Trump was going to go to prison. He wouldn't have to deal with it. Now, I don't know why. They always say Donald Trump's corrupt, he should go to prison, blah, blah, blah. They never say why. Because there is no why. They just wish it. They want to be able to start the gulag, start the concentration camps. But anyway, here's Claire McCaskill from her kitchen on Morning Joe.
Claire, the off-lead to Jeffrey's piece on cowardice is fear. And the fear still exists out there. And some of your colleagues, former colleagues in the Senate, still seem wrapped up in this rope of fear that binds them to Donald Trump. Why is that? Why is it so deep? Why is it so lasting?
Well, I would disagree that it is as much fear for themselves and their families as it is fear of not having political power. I think this whole exercise is exhibit A of how people's desire for power overcomes their integrity, overcomes their character. You know, Mitch McConnell thinks his legacy is going to be the Supreme Court. I would tell you, I believe his legacy will be his failure to lead at the most critical juncture in American history. That is, are we going to go down the road where presidents are going to try to use violence to fight the will of the voters? Or are we not? And if you look at what happened, I mean, I know all these people. I know many of them very well. And they can't stand this guy. They know how bad he is. And if you remember, Mitch McConnell likes to brag about how well he knows politics. He gave a speech on the floor, I know my politics. Well, he misjudged his politics here because what he believed is that Trump, under a Joe Biden administration, would quickly go to prison. He believed that the criminal justice system would do its job in a way that would minimize the possibility of Donald Trump coming back. Well, he misjudged that. We can talk about Merrick Garland and him dragging his feet. We can talk about all kinds of issues. But that didn't happen.
That's the thing about it. Look, again, it goes back to the theme. If you're on the left, you can say anything. Who's going to call you on it? Mike Barnicle's going to call you on it? Mika's going to jerk awake from her halcyon haze and go, wait a second, what proof do you have of it? There's no demand of proof. There's no fact check. There's nothing. You can say whatever you want. You can be, hell, you can be whatever you want. Claire McCaskill can be a man if she, actually, I might believe that one. That's beside the point. We are out of time for the rest of today. I think that's enough, a good enough place to stop anyway. A good transvestite Claire McCaskill joke. Honestly, look at pictures. Tell me you wouldn't buy it. Have a great Thursday. Tomorrow is Friday. Oh, thank God. Thank God it's Friday. Have a great one. We'll talk to you then.